Call the roll. So Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Bailey? And Commissioner Ritchie? And Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
So, Madam Chair, we have a quorum, and we are in official business for all three of those meetings. With your permission, may we go to citizens' communication?
Yes.
Are there any members of the community who would wish to offer comments to the board?
Please unmute or enter star 6 on your phone.
Yes, this is Zenobia Joseph, Mr. Gerber.
Ms. Joseph, why don't you go ahead? You have 3 minutes to give comments to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Members, I'm Zenobia Joseph. I just wanted to give you an update. I forwarded you the link to the story that aired on KUT yesterday, and it's also published in the Austin Monitor. It actually mentions the House Bill 3893. The title is Austin's Downtown Rail Plans Shifted After Bill Allowing Transit Under Parks Failed to Pass. It does include my comment where it says local transit activist Zenobia Joseph urged state lawmakers to kill the bill based on a relief that Project Connect prioritizes wealthier white riders in central Austin at the expense of lower income riders of color who live closer to the periphery of Capital Metro service area. And then it did quote me as saying, I thank the Republican senators for understanding my explanation of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, and national origin. I share that with you so that you could actually understand what Capital Metro's plans are moving forward. And I also sent you the link to the story that aired on July 6, 2021. And in that story, there was actually a Title VI analysis update to Capital Metro's board. And the reporter concluded Capital Metro's own 266-page analysis, while finding itself in compliance with Title VI, also reveals some obvious disparities. The makeup of the organization's two advisory panels is disproportionately white. Commuter rail service, which costs Cap Metro significantly more per trip than bus service, has 70% white ridership and caters to the agency's wealthiest riders. During the midday, buses on routes that serve larger percentages of minority riders are more full and less punctual. I don't want you to think I'm just beating up on Capital Metro, so I'm going to give you at least one thing that may help some of the individuals that live north of Dessau. So the pickup zone was implemented June 14th, and there are senior citizens at Harris Branch in the senior living project there. And so the people that live in your projects in Dessau and the Howard Lane area can actually call, and it's a 15-minute estimation before they pick you up. And it basically brings you in the neighborhood up to Tech Ridge Park and Ride Monday through Friday, 7 to 7. So that may be helpful. I did have a recommendation, however, as it relates to the budget. The Travis County Commissioners Court received $247 million in federal funding, and there is still no transportation in the Ventura-Palmer area. And so I'm just asking that you consider writing a letter to them to actually ask them to use some of the federal funds for transportation, Samsung to Apple, which is $4.7 million. And also, I know you give vouchers for the homeless issue, and to restore the Rutland bus, Espero. Rutland will have 101 of 171 permanent supportive housing units for vouchers there, and that route is $945,000. And I sent you the link. The Federal Register closes tomorrow for the federal funds. And so those are my comments, and I just want you to know that the Travis County did commit $6.7 million 2 weeks ago to Workforce Solutions North, but I know that there are non-traditional creatives that may benefit from this funding as well. So if you already have that data of what the needs are, that would be helpful. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Joseph. Your ears should have been burning. Staff was actually talking about your we're talking on, I guess, Monday or Tuesday about your work. And Ron Kowal and I and Suzanne and wanted to add Sylvia to the discussion as well, and maybe Lisa. We'd love to invite you in to come and visit with us. I think all of us are, we've worked a lot with Cap Metro over the years, but I think we're not as attuned to some of the issues of accessibility and mobility that you've been so active on. And I think we learn a lot. And so if you're open to it, I was sharing with folks, I'm going to be out of pocket for a little bit of a vacation starting next week, but maybe in early August, we could try to find a time for you to come in and visit if you felt comfortable doing that. All of us here are vaccinated, but we'd be glad to, if you prefer to do it by video, we can do it that way. But I think we would learn some things as we think about citing other properties and, yeah, making sure that folks are connected and have access the way I think all of us, you know, aspire to have them be.
And I thank you, Mr. Gerber. I'd be glad to meet with you, speak with you. This has been an ongoing issue since 2016, so I certainly don't expect you to know about the nuances of, you know, the bus routes. I'll just, if I may, just tell you one specific example. You know, that now we have the soccer games. Well, the routes that actually connect right there, it's 392 Breaker, and it's every 20 minutes on soccer game days and 15 minutes from Lakeline. But if you're in the neighborhood trying to get to work, it's 45 minutes and a 30-minute transfer. So that'll improve to 30 minutes in August because of my advocacy, I humbly will say. But, you know, it's things like that that I would not expect the board at a 30,000-foot level to recognize as happening on the ground. But it does impact the people who, you know, obviously live in your development. So I appreciate the invite and would be glad to meet with you.
Thank you. Commissioners, are there any other questions for Ms. Joseph? Are there any other citizens wishing to give communications to the board? Ms. Aleshire, I see that you're on the call today. Would you want to address the board?
Just listening today. Thank you.
Of course. And I see others on as well. If anyone else would like to speak, please do so now. I see someone listed as caller two. If caller two could identify themselves so we can make note of that. Is there a caller who hasn't identified themselves?
Mike, we have two callers. If you could hit star six and identify yourself, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, with your permission, we'll go to the consent. So citizens' communication is closed, and we'll go to item one on the consent agenda, which is approval of the board minutes for the board meeting held on June 17th, 2021.
Okay. Go ahead and read right under it, the action items.
So first we'll approve the consent agenda and item number one.
Okay, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the approval of the board meeting summary for the board meeting held on June 17, 2021. Are there any, I'm blank today, sorry. I'm
no
on
worries.
Medication.
No. Oh. Any comments or thoughts that people have, or is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay, Commissioner Carrington? Okay. Anybody else?
The motion.
Have a second?
Second the motion.
Okay, Commissioner Hall. Okay.
And are there any comments on the motion? Any discussion? So
all
hearing.
Questions.
Hearing none, then
so
Madam Chair,
carried.
Call the vote. Yep.
Okay.
Say all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? And
none. Okay.
Number one is done. Madam Chair, we'll go down next as you're starting on the under the action items. If you'd like to call out number two, and then Pilar will be staffing that one.
The update on HACA's actions related to the corona, and update on HACA's resident client support center. Is that Pilar?
Good afternoon, commissioners and staff and visitors. We've continued to be busy to address the pandemic. We're very happy to see that it's receding. but we have continued our activities. For example, we've been working with Keep Austin Fed and Keep Austin Together, and that resulted in over 3,000 prepared meals delivered to the residents at seven sites. And we've been working with Central Texas Food Bank with delivering meals for youth at five other hawker sites. Barbara Jackson continues to have the HACA Support Center open and available to all our residents. We've only received 102 inbound calls this last month. The inbound calls have been low, but we continue to use the center for outreach and to keep our families informed of the services that are available to them. For example, over 1,300 texts went out to notify residents of the vaccines that would be at their sites. And also to remind residents of the summer youth programs that were going to be taking place. For example, any of the kids at Georgian and Thurmond, for their parents to know that there would be transportation to the Boys and Girls Clubs by their site, and to remind residents of the Health Start Snack Science Session. We continue to have the Boys and Girls Club extra club open for our kids during the summer and with money that you all provided to address the pandemic. We've been using our community health workers to leverage support with Austin Public Health, and have continued to provide vaccines to our residents on site. And we do do outreach. Over 2,000 families were reached to let them know about the vaccines that were coming to their site. And in June, we were able to deliver 40 doses of the vaccine. And in addition, 10 residents received their second dose. We've been continued to work with the RENT program, the Rental Assistance Program partnership with the city. We have expended all $25 million that were allocated at the end of 2021. We thought we would be done by the end of September, but we have actually distributed all the money now. As of this Friday, all of it will be distributed. So we are working with the city to refund the program. Over 4,000 families have been funded with $25 million. Each family received about 5.5 months of rent on average, about $6,000 on average. We're happy to see that the city will be allocating additional funds to the program so that we can continue with it. We did receive one additional grant in June, and that was $35,000 from the United Way to help provide training for parents and their children through our parent educator program. So we're happy to see that United Way continues to invest in that program. And that's what I have for you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Question, Sheila. On your pathways report for the summer youth program, I noticed that children learning is going to be working with our students this summer. I think it's the first time that's happening, and I don't remember that before.
Yes, it would be the first time, and we'll correct that report. It should really say that we will be providing scholarships to children who are applying for camps that they can't afford, academic camps such as the Learning from the Sylvan Learning Center. So it should be more of a general category and not just with the Sylvan Learning Center.
So you're saying that students who are applying for tests will get their services?
People who apply to us for our scholarships to be able to attend an educational summer camp. So there would be other organizations that might have an academic camp that we don't necessarily partner with, but we find it might be a property where services aren't being provided by our partners. So if it's something that we feel would help with the learning loss and getting kids prepared for the next school year, we would provide a scholarship for them.
Also, HAWC is providing a scholarship for them to attend one of their learning centers. So it's not happening on any of our sites.
Right. Correct.
Okay. And have we then filled all the seats available? You said 25 to 50 students will perhaps be attending Sylvan Learning Centers in the summer.
I don't have an update for you as to how many have taken advantage of the program yet, but we can get that to you.
Okay. I think it's a very good idea, and I would like to get a progress report on it to see how many of our students are taking advantage of it. Thank you.
Any other questions on the coronavirus report that that commissioners would have?
I have a question, Pilar. What are the residents and calling about more recently to the client support center? What are their concerns right now?
I'll let Barbara answer, but for the reports that I get, it's more about trying to reach property staff. They need assistance from property management, or there are about 10 residents that call us continuously, and they just want to chat with someone. Barbara, do you have other trends that you see?
Sure. There's usually some residents calling in that are also trying to connect with their Section 8 caseworker. And we regularly have calls from residents that have concerns about maybe what's going on property. And we, you know, are mostly directing them to their property managers and reminding them to leave a message when they call, because oftentimes they'll call and not have somebody there and don't leave a message, and then there's, of course, no way for the property manager to know what's going on. So those are the major areas. We're not hearing about specific needs, per se, that people have. It's more just kind of this has become a conduit that get connected to things that they're trying to reach.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, are there any other questions? And as I think we shared with you before, we're going to provide you with another iteration of this report on in September when we next meet. But then after that, we're going to pull away from doing the monthly coronavirus updates and updates on the Resident Client Support Center. That work will continue. We'll advise you when the support center's work is discontinued. But I think we're going to keep some parts of it for quite some time. But I think so much of this, you know, when we thought it was going to be a six-month thing, you know, now that we're, you know, well over a year into it, you're seeing really the same report each month. So we're going to try to provide you. Yep.
Are we going to be continuing to provide vaccine shots on site throughout the summer?
In some cases, yes. We have our health and wellness coordinator, Anthony Schmucker, is continuing to plan different events. We've been offering, for example, when we held a resident meeting on Rosewood Courts, we had Austin Public Health front and center giving vaccinations. You know, right now we're dealing with vaccine hesitancy among residents, and so we're looking at incentive programs and other things that we can do in that space. But yes, to the extent that we can, we're going to continue to give vaccines at different events. But we also have to be realistic that, you know, there's such widespread availability now. And I think we do want to direct people, given some of the concerns that we're seeing about the one-and-done Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I think we want to direct people to the vaccines that seem to be a little bit more stout, if you will, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines. And so that may be less attractive to some folks. And, of course, that one, you know, any vaccine is better than no vaccine, but We want our residents to have the best, the one that's going to be the most durable. And it seems like the early reports on Moderna and Pfizer seem to be, seem to be more promising. And so we do want to direct folks. There's obviously intense refrigeration needs and issues that are involved there. So we're working through that, continue with our partnership with Austin Public Health and with others, and with our own health and wellness coordinator. Laura, anything you'd add to that?
Just that we've been able to administer over 640 vaccinations at our sites, and each one of our 18 sites has received at least one clinic on site. And now they're open on an on-call basis, so the family can call in and somebody will, the mobile clinic will come to them.
Thank you, Pilar, because you just answered the question I was going to ask. How many in total have we got? So that's a very good number. I hope that we can increase it, especially with this new variant coming around. Thank you.
Any other questions related to item number two? If not, Madam Chair, then we'll move on to item, with your permission, we'll move on to item number three.
The presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 02710, approval of the emergency housing voucher policy.
And Madam Chair, Lisa Garcia, our Vice President for Rental Assistance, is going to present that item.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff, and guests. I'm here today to present, well, first off, I'm Lisa Garcia. I'm the Vice President of Assisted Housing, and I'm here today to ask for approval of resolution number 2710, approval of the Emergency Housing Voucher Program. In March of 2021, President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan Act, and with that act, there was $5 billion appropriated for the Emergency Housing Voucher Program. And the Housing Authority received 242 emergency housing vouchers. And these vouchers are specifically set aside or designated to help the homeless, those at risk of being homeless, those fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, stalking, or human trafficking, and those that are at risk of becoming homeless. There's a few key features with these new vouchers that I'm just going to mention. I summarized all those features in the material before you, but I'm going to just hit a few of the high points. One of those features is requiring housing authorities that accept the vouchers to sign a memorandum of understanding with the continuum of care. In Austin, that would be ECHO, or the Ending Community Homeless Coalition. I have Kate Moore, she's joined us today with ECHO. And we have signed an MOU with ECHO. And ECHO, in their role, they're helping to guide us and lead us in terms of the establishment of the policies, as well as coordinating the referrals through coordinated entry and coordinating case management services for the individuals and families that are going to receive the vouchers. So thank you, Kate, for joining us today. I appreciate it. And she's available, too, if you have any questions a little bit later. Additionally, there's some support services that are made available with these vouchers, which is very unique. It allows us to be able to provide support services such as security deposit, application fees. We can do landlord incentives to encourage landlords to participate in the program as well. And those are all listed in your document. We also get some placement fees when we lease families early. We get some additional admin fees and upfront fees, which is awesome because it's something when you get new vouchers, you don't get paid till you lease families up. So we did receive some placement fees. And then there's some ability to have reduced or like screening in terms of criminal screening so that people, there's lower the barriers so people, so individuals and families can get into the housing, as well as lightening up on some of the administrative requirements like certifications to get individuals and families in the inspection process. And all of those things we've established in the document that's before you. One final thing, it allows us to set the payment standard at 120% of the published fair market rents, which we, in consultation with ECHO and other community partners, made the decision to do that because we want to make sure we can issue the vouchers quickly and make sure that we have the greatest success for those that are issued the vouchers. We've been planning since we received notice of these vouchers. First thing, I think we had our first meeting when we received notice, it was back in May. And we've had great meetings every Friday with ECHO and other community partners. And we are ready to go. I think we're ready to receive referrals starting next week as soon as this policy is approved. So I will stop there and open it up to any questions you might have.
Commissioners, there may be some. Yes, Commissioner Carrington.
Lisa, what's a couple things, and I'm reading through, as I read through your summary, what's the total amount of fees that HACA is eligible for per placement, per voucher? It looks like there were a number of fees that made this, I don't want to say lucrative, but when I read through it, it looked like it was lucrative.
Yeah, so we can get a, it's about, if we maximize all the fees, and I'm going to say there's two separate, so the preliminary fees, I'm going to give you an estimate, it's about $255,000. And then in addition, when we lease families up, you know, the general admin fee that you get when you lease families up, it's about the same, about $255,000. So there is that upfront if we're able to lease individuals, you know, quickly. Addition to that, the support service fees, now that goes directly to the family. They're eligible up to $3,500 per individual.
Okay.
And that's where we can do the support service fees. So it's really, as being a member of NARO and chairing the housing committee, pretty much everything we asked HUD to do with these emergency vouchers, they did. It's really a rich program. If we're able to, if this is a pilot and we could operate the regular voucher program with this kind of upfront admin fees as well as the service fees, we would really go with the great things to get families into housing and individuals into housing.
What are 242 vouchers. So let's say we place them all. What's the term on those? I mean, I know they're, I guess they're a year at a time, but what happens after that? Is this a 10-year program, a 15-year program?
So right now, the way it's written is the program, it says that it sunsets in September 30, 2023. But it also, if anybody, what that means is whoever's in the program on September 30, 2023, they get to keep their voucher and stay in the program, and then it'll go through the normal appropriations as we do with the regular voucher funding. However, you can't reissue the vouchers. So if, let's say at the end of September 2023, five people leave the
Lisa, did you freeze up?
Can't hear you, Lisa.
Looks like Lisa froze up.
We'll let her come back on in just a moment, I'm sure. I think there may have been one or two people who wanted to speak. If now would be an okay, Madam Chair, for any of our members of the public who might want to speak on this item. Kate, I don't know if you wanted to chime in with any thoughts. Kate's been a leader at ECHO and is an alumni of the Texas Department of Housing as well, and has been involved in housing circles for many years, and it's good to see you on the call.
Hi, it's good to see you too. It's good to see all of you. Thank you so much for inviting ECHO to attend. I think I would just add that this has been one of the most incredible opportunities for us as a community, and we really appreciated the partnership with HACA. One of the most exciting things that we're doing with these emergency vouchers as a community is creating permanent supportive housing. So we've been able to leverage these vouchers to bring in services from the Downtown Austin Community Court, from Integral Care, from Caritas, from other provider agencies to create really rich service packages that's really going to go a long way to helping us meet some goals around ending unsheltered homelessness. which has been really top of mind for our community. So right now it looks like we might be able to create over 200 of permanent supportive housing units at matching services with these vouchers. So I just want to make sure that I had an opportunity to thank the Housing Authority and thank Lisa and Dylan and her team for all the efforts they put into creating this partnership. We are really thrilled and excited about what's coming out of it. So I just wanted an opportunity to say thank you and to be available for any questions that you might have about the logistics or how it works or just in general.
Commissioners, are there any questions for Kate?
I think I still am not clear because Lisa froze up. So this is scheduled to end September 2023, if I heard her correctly. What happens? I'm sorry?
Dylan Schubitz, and Dylan Schubitz, who's her deputy, is on the line as well. Dylan, is Commissioner Carrington's understanding
correct?
What
happens after that? What happens after that?
Sure. So, yeah, September 2023, the vouchers are permanent, like a regular housing choice voucher. And at that September 2023 point, anyone who exits the program after then, that voucher cannot be reissued to a new family. So the program sort of designed to, diminish gradually as people exit the program after September 2023. But anyone who's on the program at that point can continue on the program, as long as Congress approves the funding for it.
Okay, so they continue on past an initial year or two. They don't transfer over then to one of our other voucher programs. They stay under this emergency housing voucher program.
Yeah, that's correct.
Correct. Sorry, I lost connection. I'm at HACA. For some reason, my connection here is not good.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you, Dylan.
And Dylan, of course, as you all know, oversees our special purpose vouchers. And so this is really one of those. The Housing Choice Voucher Program has not been expanding. It's really been these special purpose vouchers like VACH for chronically homeless vets, the emergency housing voucher, family unification protection vouchers, the mainstream vouchers. All of those are the special purpose vouchers. So Dylan's area has seen a lot of growth. And Dylan, as you know, has developed a tremendous amount of expertise in this space and has been active for many years with ECHO backstopping Lisa's work. So he's going to be right in the thick of it. It's exciting. It's exciting to see these resources come. There's also, and Lisa's been in the thick at the national level, there's talk about a universal voucher system, meaning that anyone who needs a voucher needs rental help can maybe finally get one. That would include our homeless neighbors. And so that's an exciting area of policy that's taking place literally is under consideration literally as we speak. And at the very least, what's being appropriated by Congress looks like it's going to provide, at least another 125,000, if not more, vouchers. The administration's proposed 200,000 the first shot is 125,000, but that's remarkable because it's the first time it's $1 billion more in a program that has basically stayed pretty flat in terms of the number of vouchers for a number of years. So we're anticipating quite a bit of growth in the voucher program in years to come, and obviously prioritizing homelessness homeless neighbors will be right at the top.
Question. So if I need to direct this to Lisa or to Dylan, or Kate, all three of you may respond. But my question involves what is happening today in Austin with all of the homeless people being required to go somewhere. Are they going to have an opportunity to apply for one of these 242 vouchers? And if so, are there places for them to use these vouchers?
Do you want me to take that? That's a really good question. So yes, they have an opportunity to access these vouchers. our community, like communities around the country, follow HUD guidance of a coordinated assessment process where people are assessed based off and prioritized based off the community priorities and the vulnerability for programs and services. So we already have people who are ready right now, who have been assessed, who are currently unsheltered, that will be able to access these units. And one of the great things is we've been able to create permanent supportive housing, which is one of the biggest needs in our community that is really hard to fund. And so we've been able to probably serve at least 300 people with permanent supportive housing who have been already assessed. We will continue to assess people as a community. So if there's people who have not been assessed, they would be able to apply for this resource as well. But they would be doing so by doing that assessment and being placed on a list. Essentially, we call it a by-name list is the name of that coordinated entry list. And you had a second question. Oh, will they be able to – how will they get a place to live? I'm going to turn over to Lisa and Dylan because they are doing some work to help access people with these vouchers be able to access units in the community to answer that question.
Dylan, Lisa. Dylan, what do you think?
You're on mute, Dylan.
Kate summed it up well. Kate summed it up pretty well. HUD's instructed in their rules for this program that families will not be able to apply directly to the housing authority for this assistance. They will instead, like Kate said, access these vouchers through the coordinated entry system. When someone completes one of those assessments, they're prioritized for a number of programs across the community, including the Emergency Housing Voucher Program.
Okay, then let me ask a related question. How closely are you working with other providers or agencies other than ECHO to make sure that none of these people are falling through the cracks?
So ECHO is not a provider. They're really kind of serving as a central coordinating entity.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. But then
so
they have their coordination going with all these other providers, correct?
Correct. Correct. Yes, we work, and so we actually work with them as well, with ECHO, through ECHO, and independently, with Caritas, with Foundation Communities, with Front Steps, with Salvation Army, and Trinity Center, and so many others that have capacity. We have a significant capacity issue here in our city. We've expressed that to Kate and to the executive director and to the governing board of ECHO. There's a new governing structure within ECHO as a result of a summit that got held here under Mayor Adler's direction. We've indicated that, we can provide vouchers and operating subsidy to properties, but the fact is that we don't have enough supportive services attendant with that and enough providers of those supportive services in this community to be able to really ensure that resident will be successful. It's a substantial problem that the community is working to address, and we've highlighted that issue, and I think Kate is pretty attuned to it. If Kate, you want to share on your end as we work to build up supportive services capacity?
Sure. I think you captured well ECHO's role. We coordinate with all of the providers. We're not a service provider ourselves, but we're more of the coordinator of the homeless response system, the way to think about it. And what's exciting about the emergency housing vouchers particularly is the robust services that are going to be offered to the emergency housing voucher holders through permanent supportive housing. And so we've been able to design assistance through, for instance, the Downtown Austin Community Court has a robust service package. They just didn't have access to rental assistance. So they were really thrilled to be able to create a permanent supportive housing program by bringing their rich supportive services and pairing it up with the voucher.
So, for instance, they're working with people already in the community court who are receiving rich case management, but they're experiencing homelessness. They just don't have access to a housing resource. So we have been able to do that with various providers in the community with these emergency housing vouchers. So I think, I guess I want to address it in one way with addressing it that with that is that I do not think that's going to be a problem with the emergency housing vouchers. We've brought in really rich services from community providers who are Integral Care, Caritas, DAC. On the other hand, our community is definitely having a capacity issue. And it's something that we are really working on and thinking of as a system, is that how can we help support our providers to grow? You know, as Mike, as Mr. Gerber, sorry, I've known Mr. Gerber a long time.
It's Mike.
Indicated, you know, the Biden administration is, we expect more and more resources to be coming down, whether through housing authorities or in other funding mechanisms. And we need our providers to have the capacity to serve people. And so it's just, it's something that we are working on, is how to support our providers as a system, because we know it's an acute issue.
So Commissioner Duncan Hall, I would just maybe turn back to Dylan for a second, because I think that, I don't think we'll have a problem utilizing the 242, but when the summit our community set the goal of helping 3,000 unsheltered homeless over the next couple of years, it does present substantial issues. And so, Dylan, I know you've given a lot of thought to that question, you know, and in your discussions with ECHO, can you give the board maybe a little sense of kind of the space where, you know, you're working in and your conversations with both ECHO and more broadly with the providers that you're working with to make sure we have that capacity there? What's the HACA? Where's HACA fitting in?
Can you all hear me okay? I just dialed
sure.
in.
Yeah.
Okay, great. HACA's got the subsidies. You know, we're the you know, the conduit for the federal housing subsidies. And finding those partnerships, developing those partnerships across the COC through a number of our programs are, you know, we've built relationships with many of the partners that Kate mentioned with Integral Care and the Downtown Court. With Caritas of Austin, and now they're sort of at the ready, ready to refer clients to us, and paired with our subsidies, we can create the permanent supportive housing and make that capacity, happen. The team that we've got on board, we've hired two new people to administer the emergency housing voucher program. My team in special programs is they're also, you know, making these connections with the frontline social workers who provide the client service, and ensuring that we once we house people that we keep them housed and wrap them with all the services that they need to prevent their return to homelessness.
That's really the key. We can get people into a unit. It's keeping them housed and ensuring that, and that only comes with the supportive services. Because what Ron has seen as we've housed folks in the AHC portfolio who've, you know, come in with a VASH voucher is that the second the supportive services peel off is the moment that the challenges really start, and those people are really at the most vulnerable most vulnerable to eviction or just the inability to sustain, you know, living there because of a variety of mental health, addiction, behavioral health, and other issues, and that's the space we need to really build up here in our community. Commissioner, are there any questions?
I guess my concern is, I understand that we may have the units available, but if they're not supportive service available for those individuals, then it's probably not going to be a successful match. And that does bother me, and I don't know how mobile these support services can be to be helpful if we have people to be ready to move into our units and sort of be immersed in a more, what am I trying to say, normal living environment. But if we cannot provide help to them in that environment, then it's not going to be successful. Is that my understanding?
Go ahead, Lisa.
I'm sorry, I'm having really bad connection problems, but I just wanted to say that there are support services. The case managers are providing support services with the families that receive the emergency housing vouchers, and that is the work we're doing in coordination with ECHO to make.
Yeah, it's going to be impossible for us to find building units where you have live-in support services available to the people in that unit. So we've got to be able to spread them out. But having mobile support services is going
to
be different.
To provide those support services.
Yeah.
So maybe I can jump in and make so all of the services that are being designed and packaged to pair with emergency housing vouchers are tenant based, and they're designed to support wherever the tenant is. So that's something that they do already, and that's the way the programs are designed. It's not designed to be a program where everybody has to be in one place. And it's a single site. So this is a scattered site, permanent supportive housing, tenant-based program.
Okay.
So Commissioner, I think we will hit the mark of everyone's expectations on the 247, just as we're going to hit the mark with the project-based vouchers that the board has authorized to projects like the Prospero at Rutland, as we've done for the Elysium, as we've done for other properties in the project basing that you all have approved. And we're actually going to be proposing with Dylan's leadership and Lisa's leadership, proposing taking another 200 plus vouchers out soon for project basing. So we're working to get that done soon so we can move forward with that. So once we start seeing dramatic new numbers of units coming online, we can handle 240 right now. What we can't handle is 3,000. And that's the city's goal over the 2-year period. Luckily we get a little time to build into it, but it's gonna be challenging, and we're gonna have there's more bad news to come before good news. But things should start to look appreciably better, I think a year and a half to 2 years from now, than they look today, provided that the number of unsheltered homeless remains around what the point in time count shows, which is about 3,000. Is that fair, Kate?
And one other question: does the site explain why these emergency vouchers cannot be tenant based? Project based. They have to be
tenant based. So to date, we've done our programs have been these will be tenant based.
That's correct.
But that is why we were looking at the need to, and what we've been resistant to project basing, because we've wanted to provide more tenant choice. Mm-hmm. We operate 450 VASH vouchers and a variety of other voucher programs that assist the homeless. And those folks haven't had trouble finding a unit, they've had trouble staying in the unit. And so the project basing of a voucher has bigger implications because we provide a long-term operating subsidy to the property. But in large part, the property is going to be geared towards a housing-first model where they're going to be set up right there to deal with every issue that homeless person can present. So while the tenant can still go and say, I'm out of here, and they do, there's going to be a far greater ability to manage the variety of challenges present that the person who's unsheltered presents with. So case in point, while we were so happy to be at Terraces at Oak Springs, right there on Oak Springs Drive by near BTW, is that all 50 of those units, we're in all 50 of them, with a combination of VASH vouchers or housing choice vouchers, while we obtain the operating subsidy, they've got incredible services there. They're not, someone has to be making the conscious decision that they just no longer want to live there, because no one's being, it's very unlikely you're going to be thrown out. They're really working hard to prevent evictions and to meet people where they are with the raft of addiction counseling and other supportive services that residents that and basic life skills that folks need. The problem in the city is that we just need about 20 more of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where our funding, like for the Prospero at Rutland, is going to be so impactful, because we're going to be in a large number of those units. The city is also setting up a project-based funding mechanism, and they're going to also be vested funding a significant portion of those units as well. So the combination means there's another property getting ready to be built that's going to be exclusively for permanent supportive housing and the housing first model. Problem there is that we need 20 more of Prospero at Rutland.
Yeah. Okay, thank you all.
So Commissioner Zavira,
it's caller 6 if you need her.
Oh, great. So Commissioners, with your permission, we'd like to ask you all to put forward a motion to approve resolution number 02710, approving the emergency housing voucher policy.
I so move.
I'll second.
Commissioner Apostolo?
So move.
You're voting in favor of?
Yes.
Great. And with that, we have approval at 3-0, and so we can move on to item number 4. Madam Chair, item number 4 is an update on Austin Affordable Housing Corporation's acquisition and development programs, and Ron Kowal and Suzanne Schwartner will give just a real quick overview, and we'll be focusing mostly on the overview sheet that is in your book. Ron?
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Gerber, and staff and guests. I'll be real brief. I always hate to start these out with the disappointing news, but as you found out and when you logged on to this meeting, the Park at Schofield apartments was pulled, and it's because we made it to the very final two, and we found out that after final and best offers and everything were locked and sealed, they allowed the other participant to up their offer without us knowing and awarded it to the other group. And while it was disappointing to us and our partner CDT, the real loss here is going to be to the tenants, who are going to suffer some extremely unfortunate rental increases in the amounts of $200 to $400 increases in order for them to meet the price that they pay for this project. So while we're disappointed, it doesn't mean we're stopping moving forward. And I think just a 30,000-foot overview, both Suzanne and I have several other new projects that will be coming to you in September and maybe October, and we're continuing to work and looking at those opportunities. And we don't lose hope, and we don't get too disappointed. We get over it and we go on to the next one. But I think it paints a pretty good picture for you all to see the amount of activity and the demand in the for-profit world here that are coming in and scooping up anything and everything they can, no matter what, at any and all costs, showing you where the trend of this is going. When it comes to the multifamily markets, both in new construction and in the acquisition side. And I piggyback that by, on the map, you see our vacancy occupancy numbers. And again, this was done previously to get me timing on the board book, and those occupancy numbers have actually increased. We are seeing a tremendous amount of activity, as we thought, now that people are out about more mobile, and able to visit different apartments and coming out from the COVID problem, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity in our portfolio looking for affordable options to rent in almost every area. We have such minimal inventory left in our portfolio now that we are anticipating probably being close to 100% occupancy across our board by October with very, very few move outs. So the traffic is just it's just out of control, and which is a good thing, but it just emphasizes the need that we have to continue doing what we're doing and providing these affordable options for people out there, because man, it is really getting tough. And I don't know if the prices of housing where they are now at medium housing at $450,000 to $460,000 for a house. I think you're seeing the results of that, and people are trying to get into other areas, and we're seeing higher opportunity or other properties and higher opportunities getting hit with a lot of families trying to get into good schools. So that's a good thing, and we're doing everything we possibly can. Stay tuned. We have the Henderson on Rhine that Suzanne will be presenting here to you shortly, which is going to be a good project, and we're excited about that. And a couple more coming in the near future, but we'll continue to keep working hard. Everything across the portfolio is doing very well. We're close to being finished with our snowpocalypse problems. We're still dealing with a few little minor glitches, but pretty much everything has been back to normal. And we're doing very good on that side. So just not much other to tell you than that. And Suzanne and I, and I think Commissioner Carrington as well, will be very, very busy and probably pretty popular at the TAP conference next week. I think Suzanne and I have a pretty robust agenda lined up, I know, on Tuesday, and I'm still getting hit with more requests for her and I to visit with people. So I think there's still a big desire to bring us in and get us more involved in other options and other opportunities. So we'll also get a better taste of what the market's doing from the credit world and things like that as well next week. So we're looking forward to a good 3 days at the conference. And I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have anything. Suzanne, I don't know if you have anything to add at this point.
No, I think you've covered it pretty well.
I would agree, Ron. I think we're going to learn an awful lot next week. At the conference, when we'll have literally everyone who works in our space kind of here in Austin. All of our partners will be here. I know a number of us will be seeing them throughout the week. I'll be seeing them on Monday, we'll be again. I think we'll learn a lot. Texas is probably the most vibrant place in the real estate market. One of the most vibrant places in the country. But even here, we're seeing, some of the disturbing trends that they're seeing nationwide. I mean, lumber, construction costs, the kinds of, capital being dumped in markets that lead to what happened with Schofield, where, you get, undersold despite folks who don't have that same affordable housing mission that we have that really does hurt the tenants. So it's lots of interesting things that we'll explore next week, and Ron and Suzanne will report back to the board on what we learned. Commission, so I think any questions for Ron in this sort of general category here? So if not, then Commissioner, then Madam Chair, I would respectfully urge that at this point we turn it over to Commissioner Carrington in her role as chair of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and Austin Affordable PFC.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gerber, and thank you, Chair Apostolo. These actions are related to item number 5. We want to go first to the back part of your book, which is the Austin Affordable Public Facilities Corporation, the PFC. Meeting has been called to order. We have certified a quorum. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on the agenda item for the Public Facility Corporation? Okay, hearing none, we will move to the consent item, which is approval of the minutes of the board meeting held on June 17th, 2021. Do I hear a motion to approve these minutes?
I so move.
Commissioner Lapisolo made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Duncan Hall? Any discussion about
second.
This?
Second.
Thank you.
No.
If not, all in favor?
Aye.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. The motion carries. So the one action item is discussion and possible action on Resolution 00089, which authorizes the sale and delivery of multifamily housing revenue bonds, the Henderson on Rainley Series 2021, authorizing the execution and delivery of documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing of such multifamily residential rental development and containing other provisions relating to the subject. And Suzanne is going to present this to you, and she's already popped up a map. Thank you, Suzanne. So I'll turn it over to Suzanne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, staff, and guests, today I'm presenting to you the Henderson on Rhineley, which is a new construction project. You first saw this back in April of 2020 for the inducement resolution and the tax credit resolution. You saw this item again last month for the public hearing. If you approve this, the resolutions this month, this will be the last time you see it, and we will close this project in August and start construction pretty soon after. This property is located on 1101 Rhineley Street. It is at the bottom of the map. It is right behind, there's a Target on Interstate 35 just south of Highway 290, and it's right behind it. I think this is going to be a really good location for, there's a lot of retail people that need affordable housing around that area, so I think we're really going to hit this one out of the ballpark. The closest properties that we currently have are Pathways at Coronado Hills and Estates at Norwood. This property is a partnership with LDG Multifamily. I just want to, just a side note, I can't express to you how important it is to have partners that have the same mission. We were presented with a deal, a new construction deal by a new partner, and we worked on it for months, and they came back to me and said, our investors want to do a market rate, so we're not going to work with you. LDG would never do that to us. LDG has the same mission as us, and they have been phenomenal partners. So we are very excited to work with them again on this deal. This one is in the Austin city limits, and the schools that anybody at the apartment would be fed into is Blanton Elementary, Lamar Middle School, and Northeast College High School, which was formerly Reagan High School. There will be 306 family units, and we will serve incomes between 50% to 70% area median family income. The debt provider is going to be Redstone, which we worked with on our last closing, Belmont, last month. And the equity provider is PNC. This is the first time we've actually closed something with PNC, so we're really excited to venture into a new partnership with them. Our bond reservation is for $45 million, and we have the normal amenities, community house, fitness center, business center. We'll have a service coordinator office, which will be really good, playground and a pool. And then the unit mix is going to be 155 one-bedroom, one-bath, 151 two-bedroom, two-bath. And then I did break those bedroom sizes out into the area median family income, which they're going to serve. So we've tried to break them out pretty evenly. You can see the 60% area median family income has about 10 more units at each for each bedroom size than the 50 and 70. But this is really good because normally our projects are 60% and below. If you make a dollar over the 60% limit, you are not qualified. So now we've got some leeway to handle people all the way up to 70% and down to 50%. And then the last slide is going to show the area median family income chart. So you can see at 50% area median family income, a person, one person household would be making $34,650. A four person household would be making $49,450. And then if you go down to the 70% area median family income, the one person household would be $48,510 and a four person household would be $69,230. So I think this, the area that it's in with so much retail, restaurants and employees like that are really going to fit into this property very well. And I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Suzanne?
I'd just say we're excited about the project, and I think there are some folks from LDG on, if I'm not mistaken, who might wish to say a word, but we really appreciate the partnership, and this is a continuation of that.
Yeah, Jake Brown is on. I've been working very closely with him on all of our projects.
Hey guys, how's it going? Yeah, we're super thrilled about this one, too. Hopefully we'll get started next month, but I'm happy to answer any questions if you guys have them.
Any questions for Jacob from LDG?
I think this is a great location. It really is right, that Capitol Plaza area right behind that. Yeah, this looks very good. I'm anxious to see it.
Any other questions or comments? If not, then I will take a motion to approve Resolution 00089, which authorizes the issuance, sale, and delivery of bonds, the Henderson on Rainley, Series 2021. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Thank you, Commissioner Hall, Duncan Hall. Commissioner Apostolo, second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you all. We will go next to, let's see. I probably need to close the meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC. I don't think I ever, it was open. So I will close the meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. A second? Tyra? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you all. The meeting closed at
1:12.
And I'm sorry, what, Mr. Gerber?
At 1:12.
Okay. 12:12 why I am, but 1:12. Thank you all. Okay. Now we'll go back to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Just forward in your book. And we have certified a quorum. I'll call the meeting to order. It's already been opened. We've certified a quorum. Is there any citizen communication related to this item? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to action item number 2. Which is the presentation discussion of Resolution 00186. And what this is asking us to do is facilitate the development of Henderson on Rainley, cause AAHC's wholly owned subsidiary to execute an amended and restated partnership agreement, cause the partnership to enter into development financing, and cause AAHC and or the general partner to execute all documents necessary to consummate the transaction. Suzanne, you again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With this resolution, it basically gives us the authority to go ahead and close the transaction to sign all the closing documents and move forward with construction. If you have any questions, I would be glad to answer.
Any questions for Suzanne or for Jacob? Is it Jacob or Jeremy?
It's neither. It's Jake.
Jake. Okay. Okay. Any questions for Suzanne or Jake? Okay. If not, then I will accept a motion to approve Resolution 00089 related to advancing bonds for the Henderson on Rainley. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Mary moved. Tyra, you second? Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Then that ends the business of the Austin Affordable PFC. Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Idia, did we vote on the minutes?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Then we'll back up just a minute and vote on the minutes of the board meeting of June the 17th, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Thank you, Tyra.
Mary, second. All in favor? Okay, all in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. With that, then we will close the meeting for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 1:15 on July the 15th. So that takes care of the items.
Sorry to ask. I need you to vote on that. Someone offer a motion to adjourn?
Vote on closing. Did we not vote on closing?
You voted on the minutes, but not on the closing. Right. The minutes are approved with Duncan Hall and Apostola seconding. So now on closing at 1:15, the motion's offered by
Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then we will close the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 12:16. Thank you, Mr. Gerber. So that's our business.
1:16 Central Time, correct. Commissioner Apostoli, you're back in the chair, and so the next item up is item number 5, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 02711 by the Board of HACA, approving resolution of Austin Affordable Housing PFC, providing for the issuance of its multifamily housing revenue bonds for the Henderson at Rhinelay, Series 2021, approving the form and substance of and authorizing the execution and delivery of documents and instruments necessary to carry out financing of such multifamily rental residential development and containing other provisions relating to the subject. This will be our final vote on the Henderson at Rhinelay prior to closing. And how soon do we expect closing to start, Suzanne?
Right now we're projecting closing of August 18th.
Terrific. So this is your final vote on this item, and we would ask for a motion approving resolution 02711. Commissioner Carrington.
And Commissioner Duncan Hall seconded.
All in favor of this item?
Aye.
Great. This item is approved unanimously by vote 3-0. Madam Chair, so with your permission, I'd like to go to various reports for just a couple of minutes, if we can. I'd like for Barbara Chen, who's our Chief Financial Officer, to give a quick couple of minutes of overview on finance. Things are going well, but I think it's important for you to hear from her. So, Barbara, would you go ahead and offer a couple quick comments?
Hi, good afternoon, Commissioner Director Gerber and the staff. Including in the bulk package that you see that the financial report as the May 31st, 2021. I'm just going to go over the summary with my, and on the page, on the pay summary page with the agency wise, all the programs combined. Go through that list and go over the numbers. So if you have any questions, I know, just kind of stop me and I can go a little bit more detail. As we see it in the financial report on the last summary, the old program combined page, you are going to see that the year-to-date budget, we have budgeted at $102 million and $151,162, and which is the 2 months out of our 12 months of budget. And our total actually, the year to date actually is $99,197,474. The major difference is because of the hub reimburse hub revenue is lower than what we budgeted for, but also because of the donation from our program to assist them to support our various programs. The donation from our SHCC and our AHC is lower than budget because why not at the beginning of the year, we were trying to make all the programs as a kind of break even. We were adjust and true up and periodically, but right now because we just based on the need based on what they spend it and the need for the department for all of the program to support the program. Overall, the expenses other than the housing assistance payment, it was based on budget, based on projection, so it's a little bit lower. But we know we have a program with coming up this 200, there are no additional new programs like the mainstream, like our VASH program. We are continue to increase our LISA, so you are going to see a little bit increase. So CAP will be a little bit closer later on the year. But otherwise, we are pretty much online, in line with what we budgeted for. And as you can see, I always like to show the bottom number for the 2 months of fiscal year 2022, for the months of April and May, our net operating income is at $2.2 million in surplus. This is a very good result. I'm very proud of us, ourselves. We are always proud of all the team, the agent, all the staff, and we are blessed with all of what we have, the grant, the revenue we, especially the AHCs that we receive an additional developer fee, the distribution make it much higher than what we original budgeted for. So we have to thank Ron and Suzanne for all this too. So just like I say, the 2 months, our net operating result for the 2 months is a little bit over $2.2 million. And like I said, we are pretty much in line with what we budget. Any question about the financial report? And we have all the supporting documents by the department, by the programs. Okay. No? Okay. Thank you. Anything, Mr. Gerber, you want me to just kind of mention and
point out
anything?
Yeah, Barbara, it's fair to say that the auditors will be here in early August to do their on-site review, and then you'll be getting will be getting our single audit in probably late September, early October. We're going to strive for the October board meeting. That's our goal. But right now we're feeling very, very, very confident in the information we're getting to them, and this is one of our first years that we did it last year as well, where we had to send them files. But as you know, we've gone through a bit large paperless effort, and so the payoff has been by going paperless that we're able to send files and documents, to the auditors, and they're able to conduct their work. But still, they're going to be coming here to be doing on-site work as well. And so we're glad that that's going to happen. It couldn't happen last year for obvious reasons, but Sean Cedar, who's been part of the Berman Hopkins audit team and knows where all the bodies are buried. We'll be here, and he'll do his due diligence. And then Sylvia's shaking her head. It's good. It's good to have auditors who know where things are. I think experience pays off.
Those are
weak spots. No bodies are buried. That's correct. No bodies are buried. Are there any other questions that Barbara has? That you all have for Barbara? Okay. I really appreciate Barbara. You know, one of the things that Barbara has had to do since coming on board has been to play really that important, provide an important, governor on spending and saying no and questioning things. And so she has been able to do that. And she is really, with Ann serving as her deputy CFO, they've built a very strong team back there, and there's some changes happening there. But I'm really pleased by how well Barbara is integrated into the agency. And while we are not always seeing eye to eye on everything, that's good. And I think she is testing our executive team with her skill and know-how, and that's providing some really important help for all of us. One thing that I will say, starting in September, when we get September, we're going to plan to have a budget and finance committee meeting, and so we're going to want to go through the numbers in a more in-depth way with Commissioners Bailey and with Commissioner Carrington, and so we'll need to plan for a little extra time for that meeting on September 16th when we next come back together. That'll be an in-person meeting, so just a heads up. Any other questions for Barbara? Okay, thanks, Barbara.
Mr. Gerber, okay. I want to add one more thing is that just kind of let Commissioner know we are start working with the RED program, our property, working on the next year's budget, calendar year 2022's budget. So we already started the process, getting the information together first, and we already met with Michael twice, so our plan right now is that we probably is going to bring our RED property, the property budget for the approval in November's board meeting.
Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate it very much. I wanted to update the board on a couple of quick things. One is that I'm really pleased that this week we got notice that from HUD that the rental assistance program and the housing choice voucher program received a 104 CMAP score. It's a perfect score with the additional deconcentration points. So that's wonderful news for that team and a testament to the real skill of Lisa and her team. So congratulations, Lisa. We're really happy and proud. I wanted to make sure you all knew that I know you've been seeing in the newspaper quite a bit about the Rosemont at Oak Valley. That's a Travis County Housing Authority site. We were in touch with them to provide, see if there were any additional units that we had available, if they were in fact going to relocate folks. We had a few, and we did provide some help to them, but it's limited because of where that property is. Interestingly, that's a property that we had looked at some years ago, had an opportunity to partner in, and we declined because of some of the issues that we saw attendant there at the property. But I wanted to just make sure you all knew that it's not a HACA property, nor is it a property within the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation portfolio. One of the properties that you have heard about before Rosemont was a property called Mount Carmel. That was a property that also got featured pretty prominently in the Austin American Statesman. That property also was not a HACA property, but it was a property that was in the Southwest Housing Compliance portfolio. Michael Cummings and I jumped into that one about a month after the storm. We had hoped that the ownership structure would do the right thing, and they really struggled to get there. And so nothing incentivizes folks more than turning off the spigot of money that funds them. So we did that, and they've been working ever since to fix the property, replace the gas lines, and do other things. And actually, residents are now moving back into that property, and so we are restarting the funds with, and we're working closely with the city and with HUD. We generally don't have a lot of latitude, but in that case, the situation was so egregious that HUD was going to have to point blank tell us you have to fund them for us to do it, and they didn't. They were really great partners, and we were pleased to work with them and, you know, get the right thing done for those residents. That situation and the situation at Rosemont have raised all sorts of questions about sort of tenant protections. And it underscores what happens when you don't have strong tenant associations and resident associations, resident councils at your properties. And we're really glad that within HACA's main portfolio, we have strong tenant councils, resident councils, and they all work in collaboration through the Citywide Advisory Board advising me and Sylvia. We are continuing to build resident councils at our properties within the Austin Affordable portfolio as well. And that's important as well, because you can learn things, hear things, deal with problems and issues on the front end. And it's important for residents to have a voice, because, you know, it's their property too. And it's their home too. And so we want to make sure that everyone has a voice and everyone gets a choice. And so, we're going to be working towards, expansion of tenant councils and tenant opportunity. At all of our properties in the months ahead, because now more than ever, I think it was harder for residents to use their voice, and I think we need to make sure that the door is open to hearing it again, because it's really the most powerful voice. And let's face it, I mean, we're here for our residents, and that's the job. So we want to make sure that there's good communication. So I want to just mention that to you, because it's been so present in the news. Starting September 16th, we're not going to be meeting in August, so no August board meeting. On September 16th, we will have our next regular board meeting. And our intent is, you'll see that there's an optional meeting scheduled for October. Our intent is to have that also be in person. So the September, October, November, December board meetings will be here in person. My belief is that all board members have been vaccinated. My belief is that all staff have been vaccinated. We are at 98% plus of our staff. That 98% of our staff have been vaccinated. I think we had 13 people on staff out of our 240 some odd who have not been vaccinated. And so we're thanks to you all providing some incentive to folks to do that. We're excited that we have, that kind of participation in the vaccination programs. And so it makes it just a lot safer work environment for all of us. So we're looking forward to welcoming folks back, still using, safe and social distancing. So you'll see a little bit of a different setup here, when you come, on the 16th, but we will have it set up so that folks can come and, be part of our work here and conduct your board work while you're here. And we'll start again at 10:30 with the Budget and Finance Committee, and then plan for our Budget Administration Committee, and then plan for a 12 noon start for the main board meeting. Are there any questions that anyone has?
I have one.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there going to be a grand opening for Chalmers East?
There is. We're trying to work with the same folks as last time, the congressman and with the mayor's office and city council. We'd like to do something, early in September if we can, but I'm not sure that we're going to get there. It may be a few weeks after that. Yeah, the Delta variant has really kind of thrown us as we see a surge. We don't want to be responsible for bringing folks together, especially when we don't have the vaccination numbers that I think we all wish we were seeing. I think in any case, it would be a masked event. We'll be exercising a lot of caution. So I think we're not there yet, but we're getting close. So stay tuned. I will tell you that staff is planning, and I haven't gotten Sylvia's permission on this, but they are looking at, I believe, Lisa, is it August 2nd?
September 2nd.
And I don't think we have any inspections September 2nd, do we? Hopefully not. So we're looking at probably at, at September 2nd, if we can, to having a welcome back for staff here. Right around September 1st, we're going to be going back to 50% if trends continue to look promising and the Delta variant doesn't, you know, scuttle all that. But our hope is that on September 2nd, which is right before the Labor Day weekend, our intent is to try to do maybe you've been to the barbecue, the cookout that we've done here at the central office in the summertime. We can't do that this year, but we want to have a socially distanced event with all staff, and commissioners would be very welcome to attend, and bring a friend with some food trucks to do hamburgers and maybe ice cream and that kind of thing. So we're looking to do that in very early September. Date may change, but September 2nd, I think, is the date that Nydia and Lisa and that our committee are looking at. Is that right, Lisa? Okay. So more information to come on that. That's all I think we've got. Is there any other questions or thoughts that people have?
Mr. Gerber, did you want me to provide a quick update on our winter storm resolution?
Sure.
So, commissioners, I did want to give you sort of a final update. Of course, our portfolio was not immune to the February winter storms, and we did sustain some damages, as had been reported by Michael Roth on a prior board meeting. But I did want to share with you that 100% of all of the units that were impacted by winter storm damages have completely come back online. And all residents that did have to temporarily relocate while damages were being repaired have also returned to properties. So primarily those damages were at Coronado Hills and at Meadowbrook Apartments. Those were the two that primarily sustained the damages that required some temporary stays at some extended stay hotels. And so we had about 12 units at Coronado Hills that sustained that damage, again, all completely back online. And at Meadowbrook, we had about 24 units that also required some extensive repairs. Again, all 24 are back online, and all residents have returned to property. So just wanted to make sure that we close the loop on that issue. And again, all residents were assisted with that temporary relocation assistance, and also provided some gift cards to assist with any meals that needed to be purchased while they were outside of their units. So that was a success. We took care of all of our families, and they are back home at their properties. That's the extent of my report.
Thank you. Any questions for Sylvia? Last issue I've got is Pilar Sanchez shared with me that, Commissioner Duncan Hall, we owe you information on the paraeducator program. You had asked last board meeting. So Pilar will call you separately to share that information with you directly and provide you with a slide deck. And if there's information that we want to share more broadly with the board, we can certainly do that. The good news is that the United Way, as I understand it, has continued with a third round of $35,000 to support the paraeducator program for an additional year. So that's really encouraging. I know Barbara has gotten off the phone already, but I can't underscore the leadership she's really shown in making this happen. So Pilar, if you and Barbara would coordinate with Commissioner Duncan Hall and visit with her offline, that would be great. So sorry we didn't get to reporting out on that. Pilar, anything you want to say on that?
No, I think you'll be pleased, Commissioner Duncan Hall, with the report we'll provide you. Over 50 residents have gone through the certification program. So, and like Mike said, we are getting another organization to help us sustain the program.
If you want to, Pilar, we can wait until August when you have full time.
In September meeting?
Yeah, that's been going on for a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
And Wilson, I see you're on the call as well. Is there anything that you want to share? How many laws did we break today?
And okay. That?
Did we break any?
You're always pretty good. You know, we'll see what happens when we're in person.
Good. Is there anything?
We'll be even better, Wilson.
Anything right. You want to share with the board? I don't think Wilson has anything to share with the board. Wilson, anything you want to share?
No, nothing. I haven't really heard too much on the personnel issues or you know, contractual issues. I'd say that the residential issues are starting to pick up, and I feel like between the change in the federal law and the local laws that you know, things on the residential side, we may be seeing more ability to move forward on evictions and those types of things. But right now things are kind of maintaining the status quo, and we'll see if the Delta variant holds up that process, but not much to report otherwise.
Wilson spent a lot of time this past week, last couple of weeks, working on the interlocal governmental agreement on the rent program, and that's made it really safe for HACA to, you know, we've moved already more than $40 million and in rental assistance in this community between the first three iterations of the program, and I literally have on my desk the ILA that Wilson's approved for this next iteration of the program, which will be still Rent 3.0. We're not changing the marketing for it. But it's wonderful that, you know, we've had strong legal review, and I appreciate that. And we're going to be able to keep the money in that pipeline, so we won't miss a beat. We'll move probably another, I think we're expecting no less than $35 million. And there's some debate about an additional, six or seven, so we could see a $42 million program before we're done. The city keeps just moving money in because we're having great success in actually getting dollars out, and it's been a tremendous partnership, not just with HACA working with CVR and Bourbon Hopkins to actually kind of be the core group, but we've got, you know, partners through foundation communities and the Health Latino Healthcare Forum and lots of which other ones? El Buen Samaritano, and there's others as well. So it's nice that we are having more success in our community, and I will tell you than almost any other community in the country in actually moving dollars. We read every day in the newspaper, you know, about how terrible things are going in moving emergency rental assistance dollars. This morning's story was about Dallas. You know, there's been stories about, you know, our sister agencies here in Texas and here in the county. It's a hard program to move dollars, and I think we have, I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like we've developed the secret sauce and dollars are moving well. And so real, a lot of thanks to Pilar and to Kelly and to their teams for what they're doing. But as you see the rent program, you know, just know that that's your agency. So that's all we've got. With that, unless there's any questions, I suggest that we adjourn, and we will come back again on Thursday, September 16th. But we'll probably be in touch with different members individually on different specific concerns. Thank you for your time and attention today.
Take care,
everybody.
We have to vote.
All right, adjourn.
Yep.
I move we adjourn.
Okay.
Mr. Carrington moves, Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds, and Commissioner Appicilli, you call the question? And so,
no.
All
in favor, say aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, Chairwoman Appicilli. Thanks for stepping in today on and pinch hitting. We appreciate it.
Thank you.